Then, lostology is the study of being lost and what that experience can teach Christians about evangelism. Who is the first and greatest lostologist? Yeah, so if we're going to learn how to become lostologists, it makes sense that we would learn more about Jesus. We're going to look at Jesus because if we can figure out how Jesus did what He did with people, maybe we can do the same things today. Now, in the study of lostology, there are 24 laws that I've found so far. You may find some more. 24 laws. The first 12 laws of lostology deal with things that help us have more understanding of the spiritually lost people that we meet. The second 12 of the laws of lostology help us get more insight into our role as part of God's search and rescue team. Now, what we're going to do in the remainder of the time that we have this week in Lostology 101 is we're going to focus today on those first 12 laws and to try to use them to gain insight into the spiritually lost people that you know right now or that you will encounter as you go back to your campuses, to your church, to your community. One of the laws this morning we want to focus on especially is this. Just because you're lost doesn't mean you're stupid. We talked about it a bit yesterday, but I'm convinced that one of the things that keeps secular people, spiritually lost people, away from ever even engaging a discussion about Christianity is they are concerned about looking and feeling foolish. How many have ever done something that really embarrassed you? Could I see your hands? I mean, even right now, if you were to tell that to someone, you would probably flush up just a little bit, okay? I want to tell you one of mine because I remember it vividly, and this has been almost 20 years ago now. I remember it, and it's come to mind being with you this week because this particular situation happened in one of the worst places it can happen. In a university classroom. I remember it exactly. I was in the sociology of religion class at Baylor University. I was there in a large group, probably 200 or more students in this particular class. We were learning all kinds of things, and this particular professor was enlightening us on a process of communication called active listening. You all know what that is. I was clueless at the time. He basically was explaining in the text that we read that the way you did active listening is that when somebody talked to you, to let them know that you were with them, you would sort of parrot back what they said. So if somebody said, "I really don't feel very good," you know, you're supposed to say, "Wow, you really don't feel very good." And if somebody said, "You know, I'm really just angry," say, "Well, it sounds to me like you're angry." And I read this and I'm thinking, this is a moronic approach to this. I mean, you know, I looked at this. I know there are guys with all kinds of degrees that thought this up and wrote big books about it. But the more I thought about it, and the more I studied it, and the more I prepared for a test, the more agitated I got. So finally, one day in class, I was overcome. I raised my hand. I said, "Sir, I think this is stupid. There is no way that anybody would respond the way these guys say. If you started talking and somebody just sort of parroted back what you said, they would stop. Nobody is stupid enough to do that." And he said, "Sounds like you're kind of upset about that." I said, "You better believe I'm upset about that. I mean, there's no way. This is an insult." He says, "Well, tell me a little bit more. Why are you feeling this way?" "Well, I'll tell you, because it's wrong. You're manipulating people." He says, "Sounds like you're really concerned about this." Do you get what happened? I mean, I lost it. I mean, I lost it. It was an out-of-body experience. I mean, I was going, and the guy was just going, and he's just drawing it out. And finally, my friend Kay sitting next to me, gives me an elbow, says, "Shut up." To this day, Kay still looks at me and cracks up laughing. I mean, it was a low point. Not only was it embarrassing, but this fella had me for lunch. I mean, it was on a bun with mayonnaise. I mean, he just had me. Man, sometimes people set themselves up for that. You can intentionally embarrass them. But you know what's tougher? You can unintentionally embarrass them. Especially when people are trying to figure out this God stuff. Now this morning, I want to give you a little test. Yesterday you said that you're bona fide religious insiders. I want to give you a test. The true religious insider will be able to name the following tune in only a handful of notes. Now let me give you a benchmark so you can set some realistic goals. Those folks last week, the other side of the big river, it took them 9 notes to name this tune. You can do better than that. I know you can. I mean, I'm with you. I'm from this side of the river. We can do better than that. We'll start off. I'm going to give you the 3 notes. Could we hear a maestro? What? Stand up and say it. What? No! No, no, no. We're up to 5. No, you got it? Wrong. More notes, more notes. Okay. What? Whoa! Stand up and say it. Yes! Zacchaeus. How many know Zacchaeus was? We've got the Zacchaeus polka band coming up. Everybody stand up. Just once for old time. Ready? Wait, 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 wait. This is a moment. This is a moment. Okay, I got to ask you. How many remember the hand motions? Could I see your hands? Yes. Some of you have not been in that long. Okay, here we go. You ready? Zach. It's just kind of a release, isn't it? It's just kind of catharsis just to do that. 5 notes. Boy, man. Oh, that's good. That's good stuff. Okay, turn to Luke chapter 19, verses 1 through 10. Man, 5 notes. Gosh. Okay, here's what we're going to do. Today, we're going to seek to understand how Jesus dealt with a lost but secular person. Tomorrow, we're going to look at how he dealt with a religious but lost person. Zacchaeus is one of my favorite people in all the Bible. Man, I love his story and I love what Jesus did with him. Let's read it together. I'll read, you follow along, Luke 19, 1 through 10. Jesus entered Jericho and was passing through, and a man there by the name of Zacchaeus. He was a chief tax collector and was wealthy. He wanted to see Jesus, but being a short man, he could not because of the crowd, so he ran ahead and climbed a sycamore tree to see him, since Jesus was coming that way. When Jesus reached the spot, he looked up to him and said, "Zacchaeus, come down immediately. I must stay at your house today." So he came down at once and welcomed him gladly. All the people saw this and began to mutter and said, "He has gone to be the guest of a sinner." But Zacchaeus stood up and said to the Lord, "Lord, look here, this day I will give half of my possessions to the poor, and if I've cheated anyone out of anything, I'll pay him back 4 times the amount." And Jesus said, "Today salvation has come to this house, because this man too was a son of Abraham. For the Son of Man came to," what? "Seek and to save," what? "What was lost." Now, I want us to kind of use that passage to open our eyes to how a lostologist would deal with that kind of situation. Because right now, there are people in your life that you know of who are like Zacchaeus. Secular people. not religious, no background, shut out of the system, lost. If you don't know them now, they're on your campus and you can find them when you get back. So we need to get ready. So who was this fellow, Zacchaeus? Well, verse 2 tells us two things. First, it tells us he was a tax collector. In fact, he was the chief tax collector and that he was wealthy. And let me tell you a little bit about the way this deal worked. When the Romans took over that area, they set up a very entrepreneurial form of tax government. In this system, a certain kind of person was destined to do very, very well. Here would be equivalent today. Let's say that the IRS went into Nashville, Tennessee, where I'm from, and they sold the franchise to Nashville, Tennessee to one person. They said, okay, here's the deal. Every year, you've got to get us $250,000. That's the deal. That's what you're going to owe us. But any more that you can collect from the people there in Nashville and the surrounding area is yours. Now, here's how we're going to help you. We're not going to tell those people how much you owe us. We're just going to let them guess. So they won't have a clue. So however much you can get from the people is your profit. So can you imagine that if somebody was pretty good at stuff like, you know, the basic things you learn in school, like extortion and, you know, that sort of thing, that intimidation and, you know, you could really do well. I mean, business school kind of stuff. You know, you could really excel in that kind of system. So Zacchaeus was a guy that not only came up, bought the franchise there in Jericho, but he actually was in some sort of pyramid marketing deals, the best I can figure it. He was the chief tax collector, which meant that he got some kind of override on his area. Now, does it lead you to believe that probably old Zacchaeus had all the bucks he needed? You bet. The Bible says he was the chief tax collector and he was wealthy. Now, let me tell you about some of the repercussions. Obviously, Zacchaeus had something going for him. That is, he had lots of money, but he also had something going against him. What he had going against him was the fact that nobody liked him. You know, can you kind of get with me on that? You figure that out. Nobody's going to like a guy who is constantly extorting money from him. So socially, this guy was absolutely isolated. Also, he was locked out of the religious system of the day. So Zacchaeus was somebody who had everything that money could buy, but nothing that money couldn't buy. He couldn't have relationship, friendship. He couldn't have anything except being with his other tax collecting buddies. They were the only ones who would hang with him. Also, he was locked out from any hope of ever finding anything in his life that could be met spiritually. He was absolutely in a mess. Now, one of the things we learn about people that are wealthy is that they can kind of go quite a while before things really get to a crisis point. I was a pastor in a community in the Northwest that was the highest per capita city in Oregon. This particular community was amazing in the amount of wealth that was there, and I got a real insight into how people that have a lot of resources respond. I went there thinking I was going to be able to talk to them about the needs in their life and how Christ could meet them, but guess what? Every time a need came to the surface, you know what they did? They either got a new boyfriend or girlfriend, built a new house, took a trip around the world, they got this or that. I mean, they can go a long time. That doesn't mean those needs are not there. It doesn't mean they're not going to come to the surface, but they can forestall them longer and longer and longer. And that's what was going on with our man Zacchaeus. So there are people around you right now who are locked out of the system. They're, for all practical purposes, in a position where they are not going to find God very easily. Let's ask a second question. What did old Zacchaeus want? Look at verse 3. It's pretty interesting. Now, this is a guy that for all practical purposes had everything, but the Bible tells us that he wanted something. What does he say? What did he want? He wanted to see Jesus. Okay, that's pretty clear cut. Now, why did he want to see Jesus? I mean, basically what you've got here is a guy that's kind of curious. I mean, he wasn't saying, I would like to commit my life to Jesus. I want to, you know, really be a different kind of person. He's just kind of curious. Why? We don't know exactly. I've got some ideas about what I think was prompting that curiosity, though. You see, I think old Zacchaeus had heard an amazing story about a guy named Matthew. What was significant about Matthew? Oh, yeah, he was a tax collector. And what did Matthew do? One day Jesus was walking by. Matthew was there in his little tax collection booth. Jesus walks up, says, "Matthew, follow me." And Matthew got up, left it there, walked away, never looked back, became a follower. Now, a word like that travels pretty fast among the circles of the tax collectors. I think eventually old Zacchaeus got the word that Matthew had gone crazy or something. I mean, the guy had lost. I mean, he had cashed out. He had walked away. I mean, for a guy that is the chief tax collector, this was mind-boggling. This would be the equivalent of somebody who's the head of a multinational corporation just one day walking away and going off and just doing some kind of religious work somewhere, and people are going there in that kind of work. They're saying, "Guy, he must have had a midlife crisis or something." So Zacchaeus was really intrigued by this. You know, man, what would cause a guy to just go bonkers like that? But you know, I think he also heard about something else. He heard about the party. Did you hear about the party? You see, right after Zacchaeus cashed out, what the Bible says is that he had a party. And you know who he invited to the party? Got any clues? Who could Matthew have hung out with? Tax collectors. Yeah, that's all he had. I mean, you know, it's a little group. They stayed together. Okay, so he brings in all the tax collectors and they get them all into a big deal. And guess who he invites? Jesus. Guess who came? Jesus. People are looking at that and you're going, "You're kidding me. This guy claims to be some big religious poobah and he's going over here to this meeting of tax collectors? Goodness, he's with tax collectors and sinners." Man, he talked about blowing his categories. Now remember what Zacchaeus is used to dealing with. Is Zacchaeus used to anybody having anything with religion opening up to him, including him? Had he ever been invited to a party by the religious guys? No way. And so suddenly two incredible bits of information got his attention. And he was just curious. You ever met anybody that's just one of these secular people in your campus, in your life, at your church, who suddenly, for some weird reason, are just kind of curious? I mean, for the longest time, they just didn't give a rip. But suddenly, it's not like they're saying, "Yeah, I want to really get into this." They're just kind of curious. Now, one of the things that's fascinating is that curiosity in Lostology is a very big deal. But it is a very subtle deal. You know how easy it is to miss curiosity? We're going to see it in a minute. But yet, what we've got to do if we're going to be Lostologists, we've got to recognize when somebody, for some reason, starts to get curious about spiritual things when they haven't been interested in that at all, we better pay attention because something exciting is about to happen. Now look what comes next. We got to figure out what did old Zacchaeus do. Look there in verse 4. "So Zacchaeus ran ahead and climbed a sycamore fig tree to see him, since Jesus was coming that way." Now, Zacchaeus was what? He was curious. So what did he do? Well, let me just give you some ideas here. What we see is a guy taking some initiative, and that's what he had to do. Who was going to help Zacchaeus find out anything about Jesus? Anybody going to help him? Uh-uh. Not a chance. Could Zacchaeus have gone up to the Pharisees and asked them? No. Could he have asked anybody else in town? Not a chance. They hated his guts. Zacchaeus was going to have to figure this thing out for himself. And guess what? A lot of the secular people on your campus today, if they got ready to try to express and follow up on some curiosity they had about a gospel, they don't have anybody they can ask. They don't have any Christian friends. They don't have anybody they can go look to, explain to them. They got to just take off themselves. Do you ever wonder why people just wander into weird churches and all that trying to find something? They don't have a clue what to do. That's what Zacchaeus did. He had to take some initiative. So what did he do? Went and climbed up a tree. Now, why did he do that? That tree bit's kind of weird. One of the things that's interesting about that tree is that he controlled his environment. Zacchaeus was not one who was particularly interested in being seen, being interested in Jesus. You know, he was curious but didn't want to show it. So what he does is solves it perfect. Gets up here on the edge of the thing, Climbs up the tree, got the big bushes in front of him. He can kind of peek out, see and be seen, but not be seen. You got it? So he's there and he's controlling his environment. He has also put himself in a situation where he is protected against doing anything stupid from his perspective. See, in the back of his mind, he's thinking, man, I don't know what happened to old Matthew. Maybe this Jesus guy's got some kind of power, you know, he gets after you and he just sucks you down and you follow him and you do stupid things, you lose your business. So Matthew's thinking, hey, if I'm up in this tree, I mean, he can't get me, I'm safe. So he's up there controlling. Now here's the thing you've got to watch. When people begin to express curiosity in the faith, and they show up at your campus ministry, they show up at your church, or maybe they just pop in your room one night and begin to ask a question, they are going to do that in a way that protects them. They're going to just express it casually. They're going to drop in a question because they want to make sure that they've got lots of room to exit if it starts getting weird. Remember, they're not committed. They're just curious. What makes the big difference, as we learn in Zacchaeus' life, is what the lostologist did. Look at that, because this is where the story gets great. Verse 5. When Jesus reached the spot, he looked up and said to him, what? Zacchaeus, come down when? Immediately, I must stay at your house. When? Today. Now here, I want to help you, because this is what I want you to leave with. The most important thing that Jesus did that day for Zacchaeus was to notice that he was there. I mean, there's a lot of stuff going on around Jesus that day. A lot of crowds, a lot of things going on. It would have been real easy for Jesus to just miss him. I mean, he was kind of up there behind the bushes. Do you ever miss the spiritually lost people around you? I mean, it's easy to do. We get real preoccupied and we just miss it. So Jesus noticed him. And not only did he notice him, but when he's walking by, he called him by name. Now, I started wondering about this. How did Jesus know his name? Okay, well, Jesus was God. He could know anything. And so, yeah, he could have done it that way. You know, God could put it in his brain. He just knew this guy's name is Zacchaeus. I like to think that maybe Jesus knew his name because Jesus had been talking to Matthew. And maybe Jesus and Matthew were having a discussion on the way as they go into town. They say, hey, Matthew, you got any of your buddies here? And Matthew would say, yeah, man, old Jericho, that's that old Zacchaeus guy. God, he is a hard nut, Jesus. I tell you what, if you could ever reach Jesus, I mean, ever reach Zacchaeus, that would be something. I mean, if you reached him, that guy is so influential. Everybody looks up to him. But I tell you what, Jesus, if there's one guy we'd never get, it's old Zacchaeus. I mean, he is just a step beyond where anybody can reach. I mean, no offense. So I think when Jesus was walking through town, I think maybe Matthew's walking by his side and he kind of gives Jesus the subtle elbow and points up in the tree and goes, bingo, he sees him. Zacchaeus. Okay, now here's where I wish we had audio tape in the Bible. How did Jesus say what he said next? Did he say, Zacchaeus, come down! It's more dramatic that way. No, because Jesus had a real problem here with Zacchaeus. Because you see, Zacchaeus was kind of hanging back. And Zacchaeus was right on the edge of a majorly embarrassing situation. Because you see, if Jesus called his name, people are going to go, look at that! Zacchaeus is up the tree! Ah, this would be the funniest thing they'd ever seen. So how was he going to get him down out of the tree without just totally ripping him up? Here's what I think. I think Jesus said, hey, Zacchaeus, man, good to see you. Come on down. I think Jesus called him down like a lost friend he hadn't seen in a while. Said, imagine meeting you here. Good grief, come on down, see me. What he did, I believe, is to honor Jesus in front of all those people. And, you know, I can just see old Zacchaeus going, you know, is there another Zacchaeus up here? And he says, he came down. Now, I don't want you to miss what occurred there. Jesus said, Zacchaeus, come down immediately, because I must go to your house today. Do you sense the urgency of that statement? If Jesus had missed Zacchaeus, if he had walked on by, if he had done any of the other important things he was doing, do you think Zacchaeus would have been in that tree the next day? No. You see, when folks get spiritually curious, it's very fleeting. And if we don't seize it, we lose it. I'm pretty amazed at how Zacchaeus responded. Every time I read this verse, I just kind of puzzle over it. Look there, verse 6. So Zacchaeus came down at once and welcomed him gladly. Why did he come down? Why did he welcome Jesus gladly? I think old Zacchaeus was just blown away. I mean, here was everything that he had thought might could happen. This was the guy, the party guy, the guy that hangs out with tax collectors. And he had just stopped there in front of everybody and he had invited him down. And something inside Zacchaeus said, man, I would give anything. I would give anything to be around somebody like that. I mean, somebody real. Somebody that doesn't make you feel foolish or bad. I just don't know, but I want to be... You know, it's amazing how much of a difference the way we respond to people can have in the way they feel about spiritual things. Do people find your faith and the way you interact with them to be appealing? Do you push them to God or away from God? Old Zacchaeus came down. Man, he was excited. But do you ever wonder about those people that were there that day? You know, there was a crowd. How did they respond? Look at it, verse 7. All the people saw this and began to mutter. Could we hear some muttering here? Could I just hear some muttering? You know, muttering is a disgusting sound, isn't it? Muttering. Mutter, 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 mutter. You know, so they're muttering. You don't always hear the content of muttering, and so if we didn't have it here in the Bible, we wouldn't know. So here's what they were muttering. Can you believe that? He has gone to be the guest of a sinner. Friends, I think that is one of the saddest verses in the whole Bible right there. Because they totally misunderstood what Jesus was about. If they had understood Jesus, what His life was about and what He was doing, would they have been surprised that He was going there? Uh-uh. What did Jesus said He did? I have come to seek and to save those who are lost. I mean, this is right along the level of somebody seeing a doctor heading toward the hospital and saying, man, can you believe that doctor going to that hospital? You know, Jesus did this. Of course He's going to go over here to Zacchaeus, the sinner. That's what Jesus did. But you know what's worse about this? Not only did these people not have a clue about Jesus, they didn't have a clue about themselves. They said, Jesus is going to be with sinners. Listen what, friend? You better be pretty glad, because that means you might have a spitting chance. Maybe if Jesus is going to go to the house of sinners, He might come to your house, because you are a sinner too. You see, one of the things that happens as we become lostologists is we not only become aware that Jesus is focused on the lost, but we become aware of the fact that we were lost. And He came to look for us. We're never amazed at what lost people do because we remember what we did. We're never amazed at how far they can mess up their lives because we remember where we were when Jesus found us. Those people didn't get it. But it didn't matter. By then, old Zacchaeus was on a roll. Look at it, verse 8. But Zacchaeus stood up and said, Lord, look, Lord. Here and now I give half of my possessions to the poor, and if I've cheated anybody out of anything, I'll pay back four times the amount. What did Zacchaeus do? Now, let me see all the hands of the business, finance, accounting, all those kind of majors. Okay, got lots of you guys. Now, here, gals, what we got here, we're about to witness a dramatic fall in net worth, okay? I want you to watch it. Zacchaeus started out as, in the tree, a very wealthy man. In one swoop, he comes in and says, "Today, Lord, I'm giving half, 50%. You talk about a drop in the Dow right there, Zal. 50% off. I am giving 50% of all I have to the poor." And the poor people are going, "Yeah, Zach, go for it, bud. I'm loving this." And then he said, "Of what I have left, I'm going to pay four times to everybody that I've cheated." And all the other people are going, "Yes, all right, Zach, go for it." Zacchaeus cashed out. Because there, that day, he said, "Lord." And he looked at Jesus, and suddenly being with Jesus mattered more to him than money. It mattered more to him than power. It mattered more to him than position. All he wanted was to do what that guy, Matthew, had done. And that's what he did. And Jesus stepped back to make sure that everybody got it. And he said, "I want you to understand what's happened here." Look at verse 9 through 10. Jesus said, "Today, salvation has come to this house because this man too is a son of Abraham. For the Son of Man came to seek and to save what was lost." People were looking at him and go, "What in the world is going on?" Jesus stepped up and said, "Hey, let me clue you in, gang. This guy just got found." That's what happened. When people get found, they're going, "Zacchaeus?" I mean, Jesus is saying, you know, the guy that nobody thought would get found? This is what happens when they get found. You know, the guy that's doing the stuff that you know he would never give up doing? This is the stuff they give up, and this is the stuff they do when they get found. And Jesus said, "This is why I came, this stuff, to call people to this kind of thing so that the people who would never be reached stop doing the things you never thought they'd stop doing so that they could get found." Jesus said, "I have come to seek and to save those who are lost." And guess what, friends? We are to do the same thing. Father, we thank You that You sought us, that You came for us, that You looked for us. And Father, when we needed it the most, that You gave us something to believe in. Amen.